Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times 8. I don't know. A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is our NBA show. I'm bringing with me Brad Rowland over at Peachtree Hoops and Uprocks.com. He's a Hawks guy, so we'll talk a little bit of Hawks tonight, but we'll talk also NBA stuff and as a little bit of a departure from our usual NFL fare. But it's July. There's not a whole lot of NFL stuff going on, so we'll talk about it tonight.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Brad, welcome back to the show. We had you on last August during training camp of the Falcons. We talked Falcons and NBA, I think. And Alan and myself, weren't too high on the Falcons season. You were a little bit optimistic. I think we probably brought you down a little bit. More after that show, but it's nice to have you back on. Unfortunately, it didn't quite end the way that we wanted it to, but you know, it's better luck next year, as they say, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it was a fun ride. Obviously, the end was not a lot of fun, as I'm sure you cover on a daily basis. But yeah, it was fun. I'm glad that I was a little higher than most people were last year. It makes me look a little bit smarter than I probably am. But yeah, man, I was happy to talk some Falcons and some Hawks and some NBA, whatever it is that you want to talk about, I'm here, and let's roll, man. It should be fun.
Well, you know, I can get your thoughts on the Falcons at the end of the show, but I do want to talk NBA with you because I'm tired of talking about the Falcons. But you may not be. You may be tired of talking about the NBA. But it's my show, so, you know, we can talk Falcons on your show or something like that. But I do want to get to the Hawks, but I do want to talk some more big picture NBA stuff. For a casual fan like myself, who only pays attention to the NBA during the playoffs and really only during the finals, what are some of the roster moves that have occurred over the last few weeks that I can at least fake it till I make it? You know, that like the next time I go to the barbershop or to try to pretend like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean the two big ones are Chris Paul going to the Rockets, basically. He was traded technically, but you know, basically forced his way to Houston, but right before he's about to hit free agency. So that's one. The other one's Gordon Hayward going to the Celtics. Those are the two big ones. Both are equally, I would say, are always close to equally important. You know, obviously the Warriors are sort of the behemoth right now. So everybody's trying to beat them, and teams are trying to load up on the high end. You know, you still have the Cavs with LeBron, and that's obviously important as well. But, you know, Boston's trying to make a run with Gordon Hayward. Didn't have to really give up much to get him in free agency. You know, and on the Houston side, you know, Chris Paul's sort of an interesting player, and there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Chris Paul playing with James Harden. Those two guys need the ball in their hands quite a bit. So having both of those guys together is going to be very interesting. They seem to be both on board with it. Apparently they talked before it all went down and sort of sorted it all out. So we'll see how that works. But those are the two big ones, man. So if you at least know that, you should be able to get away with pretty much whatever it is at the barbershop talking about the big moves.
Okay. You know, it seems like everybody's vacating the Eastern Conference. Paul George is in Oklahoma City, even though that seems everybody's talking about that just being a pit stop before he goes to L.A. next year. And you hear the talk of Carmelo possibly being the third wheel, if it's possible for Carmelo to be a third wheel in anything. In Houston, what are your thoughts on sort of the everybody just abandoning the East to, I guess, try to compete for second place in the West? It seems like, I don't know, that's how it looks to me.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, obviously Paul George got traded, but, you know, went from East to the West, and that sort of loaded things up for the Thunder. You know, the Thunder probably aren't going to be a title contender, but they'll be much better with Paul George, because Paul George is pretty good. You know, same thing with other guys. I mean, Paul Millsap's going to Denver to lope in the West. The one thing the East actually got was Gordon Hayward coming from the West to the East. But for the most part, there's always already been a ton of jokes about how bad the East is going to be, and they're probably right, to be honest. I mean, there's only a few teams in the East that are even pretty good at this point. Basically, the Cavs, the Celtics, the Wizards, and the Raptors. That's pretty much the list in the Eastern Conference of teams that are, like, you know, probably going to be, you know, somewhere in the upper 40s in terms of wins, something like that. The rest of it is pretty ugly, including the Hawks, who I cover on a daily basis. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting, because I think probably for me, I don't know, 7 of the best 9 teams in the league are in the Western Conference, something like that. Maybe 7 to 10, 8 of 11, something like that, somewhere in that range. And, I mean, the West is going to be a bloodbath, especially when you consider that, as I said before, the Warriors are still, like, the prohibitive favorite. So having them in the West as well makes things pretty crazy. So, yeah, I mean, if you're Houston or San Antonio, you don't have the option to change conferences. You kind of have to just load up and see what happens. But the talent disparity right now is pretty crazy toward the West.
I am interested. What are your thoughts about the whole idea of that disparity? And there's been a lot of talk, especially with the Warriors winning this past year. And it seems like you look at all the other major sports leagues over the last few decades, they have been trending towards parity. But it does seem like the NBA is the one of the major 4 sports leagues in North America that is trending in the opposite direction. And it seems like there's a widening disparity between the haves and the have-nots, even though that's always sort of been the case throughout NBA history, you know, even dating back to the 60s when the Celtics were basically dominating the league. But what are your thoughts on sort of that trend? Is the NBA, is it a broken system? Is this, you know, this now era of quote unquote super teams? Is this like the most extreme version of this trend? Or is the pendulum going to swing back? Where do you sort of land on this whole issue?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you said it, because, you know, parity has never been the NBA's strength. And I think people that talk about this kind of forget that. You know, Celtics and the Lakers, famously, you know, Celtics in the 60s and then both of them in the 80s, you know, MJ in the 90s, you know, the Shaq Kobe Lakers. Like, there's always been these, like, these pockets in the NBA where there's one dominant team or two dominant teams. So I do think it's, you know, potentially a little bit more radical right now with the Warriors and the Cavs the last few years. And even beyond that, sort of that next tier is only, you know, 2 or 3 teams wide, whether it be the Spurs are always in there or, you know, now maybe the Rockets, teams like that. It's not a huge thing. So I think if you're arguing against the NBA, that's one thing that's easy to argue against the NBA for, is that, you know, going into the year, there's probably, you know, maybe 5 teams on an annual basis that think they're actually going to be able to win the championship. And obviously only one will, but I mean, even the most optimistic fan probably can't get beyond 7 or 8 teams ever that have a chance to win the NBA. And most of it's because of just the impact that an individual player can have. I mean, it's basically, you know, the closest comparison in any other sport is probably the quarterback position. But even then, you know, you absolutely have to have a quarterback to win, but you can't win with just a quarterback. Whereas in basketball, you know, if you have LeBron, we've basically seen it for the last few years now. Obviously, the Cavs have a lot of talent, but in general, LeBron hasn't been on a single bad team in his entire career, outside of maybe his rookie season. If you just have LeBron and are just not complete morons in the front office, like, you're going to win 50-plus games. Whereas in football, for instance, if you have Tom Brady and a bad roster around him, you know, your team's probably better than it would be maybe in general, just because Tom Brady's awesome, or if you have Aaron Rodgers, something like that. But, like, if you have Aaron Rodgers with the worst roster in the NFL, you're still going to be bad. Because you have to play defense, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas in the NBA, one guy can make such an impact on both ends of the floor that it sort of trends toward that way when you have that upper tier of player. So, I don't know. It's probably a little bit more radical now than it has been for a while. And that's sort of the luck that transpired with the Warriors kind of putting the way the team together that they actually were able to do with where the salary cap broke for them. But it'll always come back. I mean, you're probably flow from, you know, 3 or 4 teams down to 7 or 8, but it's always going to be a league that you have to have that top tier talent to win, and there's only so many of those guys around.
Now let's talk Hawks, and sort of on a similar note, before we get into sort of the specific moves of the offseason, but that was a team that 2 years ago was in the Eastern Conference Finals, and sort of the Hawks have, at least from my perspective, again, being a little bit more of an outsider than you yourself, they've seemed to me, for the most part over the last decade, always been the team that's looking up and trying to be one of the haves, as opposed to, you know, the opposite, where the Sixers are like the extreme example of that, of bottoming out in order to try to, you know, turn yourself around and collect assets and whatnot. which seems to be the new strategy if you're not going to be one of the halves. Like, it seems like if you're in the middle, like the Hawks have been for the most part, that's really the worst place to be. But I'm curious, sort of, now we've seen the Hawks, they've pretty much lost, you know, with the loss of Millsap, much of the core of that team that was in the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years ago is now gone. And it seems like they were trying to, at least from my perspective, the last couple of off seasons, trying to get other pieces to try to get them, keep themselves at that level. You mentioned earlier that you don't necessarily see the Hawks as one of the top four or five teams in the East. What do you sort of look at with that strategy, and sort of in hindsight, do you look back and say, okay, that strategy, you know, may not have been worked, or maybe there was a couple other moves that the Hawks could have made that may have made that strategy a little bit more worthwhile? What are your thoughts to sort of, if you could label it, the process, which is a little different than the process as we hear it with other teams, but sort of the Hawks process?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, you mentioned a team 2 years ago with 60 wins. Like, that was sort of the perfect storm. Like, that team was probably not a 60-win team in terms of just talent. You know, they played together perfectly. They were one of the rare instances where a team in the NBA comes together in that way. That's sort of more than the sum of its parts. You know, for the most part, the best teams in the league always have that upper tier guy on them. And even though, you know, Paul Millsap and Al Horford specifically were, you know, those guys are like top 20, 25 players in the league. Neither one of those guys has ever been a top 10 player in the league, for instance. And, you know, most teams that win 60 games or have a real shot at winning the title have to have that player that's like on the short list of best in the NBA. So, you know, in some ways, saying they won 60 games, it definitely is true, but it almost made expectations a little bit too high for the Hawks. I think that roster is probably more of a 50-win roster, which is still a very good team, and they made the playoffs 10 years in a row as we talk now. I mean, I think this year is probably going to be ending with that, and sort of on purpose in some ways, as they're trying to sort of go in a different direction here. But there's a few things that they could have done differently. I mean, for the most part, you know, there's not a lot they could have done to ensure like they were going to be a contender right away, but I think they probably could have stayed a little bit better had they just signed Al Horford, for instance. I think that would have been a little bit of a safer move. You can argue against it because Al got a lot of money in Boston and would have been a lot of money here to stay. And he's an older guy now. He's in his 30s and, you know, never been that top tier player, even though I will always defend Al as being a very good player. But that was a decision they made to go in a different direction. I think the problem was, though, going in the Dwight Howard direction didn't necessarily work out very well. Dwight was fine himself. It wasn't necessarily his fault in terms of on the court, but just the fit was never a great one there. And then basically the other thing that they did was they failed to capitalize on their assets. You know, Al Horford left for nothing in free agency. Paul Millsap just left for nothing in free agency. The Hawks just haven't had a ton of foresight looking forward as to what they should be doing to try to build for the future. That's changing now with a new GM and Travis Schlenk in the mix. But that they kind of waited too long to do that. The previous regime didn't really look ahead. They were kind of just focused on being pretty good in the present, which is nothing wrong with being pretty good, but it's better to be pretty good and set up for the future. And the Hawks really weren't set up for the future at all. So now they're going to have to bottom out a little bit, at least for the short term, in order to get in a better position moving forward, which I understand fully. And, you know, fans probably don't like it because this year's team's probably not going to be very good necessarily, but it's the smart move now based on their roster. It's kind of like, it's a much, much less version of what the Philadelphia 76ers are doing or what the Browns are doing in the NFL. Like, the Hawks aren't really, like, they're not fully bottoming out in that way, but they're trying to at least get younger pieces, get more cost control to guys, just kind of make some bargain signings, that kind of stuff, and set themselves up for the potential to add a top-tier guy down the line, because that was always the problem. And in the NBA, if you don't have that top-tier guy, like I said before, you're kind of in trouble, because there's really only one team in the history of the league that actually won a championship without a top, you know, 7 or 8 player on their roster, and that was the Pistons in 2004, and that was kind of a perfect storm, because they had five really, really, really good players, and it's tough to build that roster in that way. It's actually much easier to build the roster with one or two top tier guys and some nice supporting pieces. So that's a really long answer, I understand, but the Hawks did some things wrong, but I understood them at the time. They wanted to be good, and they want to keep the playoff streak alive, et cetera, et cetera. It's just kind of biting them now.
Yeah. I was just curious what your thoughts on that, and sort of looking back, and, you know, like, it's what, Schroeder and Cephalosha and Muscala is like the only guys that are left from that team.
And even Cephalosha is a free agent too. So yeah, like, it's basically going to be Schroeder and Muscala, and that's going to be the list. Unless they decide to bring Cephalosha back or something like that, which I'd actually be pretty surprised. I guess Kent Bazemore as well was on that team. as a supporting piece. He was a bench guy and now is sort of in a starter role. But yeah, it's a very, very small pool of guys in addition to Mike Budenholzer who are still around. It's a much, much different looking team now, for better or worse. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the future, but it's not going to be great, I don't think, right away.
Talk about losing Millsap, who is sort of, you know, from all intents and purposes, the sort of the anchor, the core of that team. If you weren't going to consider it to be Horford, it certainly would have been Millsap over the last couple of years. What are your thoughts on his departure?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I love Paul. I think he's fantastic, and basically was the entire time he was in Atlanta. He was an all-star all 4 years with the Hawks. And, you know, I think he'll always be underrated because his game is not the prettiest thing. He doesn't have that. He's not that 30-point scorer. He's not that kind of just like huge numbers guy necessarily. So a lot of casual fans like look at scoring as the most important thing, which I understand. It's the easiest thing to track. You know, you can read the box score and see points. But with Millsap, he was capable of scoring. He rebounded at a really high level. But most importantly for me, he was a fantastic defensive player all the time. He was an all-defensive team guy, like one of the top, you know, 10 or 12 defensive players in the entire league. And losing that kind of guy is going to be really, really big this year. I understood it, again, from the Hawks' perspective, because Paul's 32 years old. And most guys, when you're getting to that age, their next contract becomes perilous. So I understand the Hawks not wanting to go in that direction. Honestly, if they want to rebuild in the way that I think that they probably do right now, if you read between the lines, Paul almost would have made them too good next year. If they were just signed Paul Millsap, you're almost guaranteed to be like sort of a fringe playoff team. And I'm not sure they want to do that. They kind of want to do the rebuild thing and look for a high-end asset potentially in the draft. Whereas if you had Paul, you'd probably be guaranteed to be somewhere in the, at least near the playoff mix. So I think it's sort of a calculated decision. They all love Paul. I know Mike Budenholzer loves Paul in the front office, always enjoyed his work. But, you know, he landed softly in Denver, a place where he actually grew up a little bit and was really excited to get there. So I'm happy for him. But it's tough for the Hawks to see him go because he was easily the best player on the team last year. And as you said before, you can sort of argue between Millsap and Horford before that. But sort of a 1A, 1B situation. And those two guys were the core for sure. And now both of them are gone. So it's kind of brutal. But I also understand what the Hawks are trying to do now because Paul is, again, I think almost too good to be on the roster right now.
I got a couple more questions for you, Brad. But I should have mentioned this at the top of the show, but in addition to all the websites that you contribute to, you're also the host of the Locked On Hawks podcast, which you can find on the Locked On Podcast Network over at audioboom.com. A lot of great NBA content elsewhere on the network, as well as great NFL content.
What you doing?
Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get 2 free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get 2 free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch 2 lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.
I do want to ask you about the draft, since I did not follow draft at all this year. But I want to ask you firstly about Dwight Howard. When you were on last August, you gave a very political, polite, you know, we'll see how it works out sort of answer with Dwight Howard. You know, now he lasted, what, like 11 and a half months in Atlanta. You know, to talk about, you know, why you didn't think that worked out and sort of that whole saga, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, and it's important to note that it's not Dwight's fault as a player necessarily. You know, he came in, he put together some good numbers. You know, his scoring was fine, his rebounding was very good. He's always been a very good rebounder. So in terms of his performance alone, I don't think you can necessarily say it was a disappointment because he kind of did what he probably should have done. Like rationally, I think I can't imagine anybody could have projected him to play better than he actually did in Atlanta. It was just more of a fit thing for me. Like, when you have Dwight Howard, you have to play a certain way. You have to play a little bit slower. You don't have the spacing that a lot of NBA teams want right now. Without getting too deep into the basketball minutia stuff, most teams are playing small. They're shooting a lot of threes. They like space, and Dwight doesn't really do that now. He used to be this like transcendent athlete when he was at his peak, man. Like, that guy was an absolute physical freak. Could play on the perimeter and like zoom around defensively. One of the best defensive players that I've ever seen, honestly. But right now, he's still a functional, useful player, but he's not that guy anymore. You know, his burst is kind of gone. He's into his 30s now, and that's what happens, especially when you come out of high school, which he did. He's been playing for more than a decade. So, again, not his fault necessarily, but I just think the fit there basketball-wise didn't ever make a ton of sense to me. And then, you know, Dwight's exit, it's sort of up for debate. You know, his last few teams have not enjoyed his presence by the end, at least according to reports. I won't claim to know what was going on in the locker room, but, you know, in Houston, things did not end very well. In Orlando, things did not end very well. In Los Angeles, same thing. You know, in Atlanta, I never heard a bad word about Dwight from a teammate, so I'll say that. I mean, it wasn't as if teammates were fed up with him, at least publicly, but there's always sort of that tinge of not knowing whether Dwight's the best locker room guy in the world. I won't claim to know, but some of the reporting from the AJC was not great on Dwight's locker room stuff. And I think you saw with the Hawks trading him for very, very little return, they kind of made a bad deal almost on purpose just to kind of not have Dwight around anymore. And I'll defend that too, because listen, Dwight Howard's a guy who is useful on a playoff team for sure. He's also not really the guy that you would want on a rebuilding team, because he's an older player. He likes to have the ball. He likes to be the center of attention in terms of on the court stuff. I think he probably thinks he's better than he is at this point, which is understandable, because again, he's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame and should be in the Hall of Fame someday. He's that good of a player. He's just not that guy anymore. I'm not sure he knows it. So, you know, rebuilding wise, you know, not having Dwight around is probably the smart thing, even though the Hawks kind of made a bad deal. So, you know, it's one of those things that just didn't work out. It wasn't anybody's fault specifically. I didn't love the move when it happened. I tried to give it a chance, because that's sort of the thing you have to do, is once the move is made, you have to be open-minded and see how it possibly could work. And they weren't awful this year. You know, they made the playoffs. It wasn't like he disappeared and did nothing whatsoever. So, again, not his fault on the court. But we'll see what happens moving forward. But I think that probably grade that as a negative trade overall. Obviously, they signed him in the first place, but the trade itself, sort of the whole Dwight Howard experience, did not go particularly well, even though if it wasn't a full-fledged disaster.
I do not subscribe to that theory, Brad, that you got to give things a chance if your team pays $32 million for a backup wide receiver, you can spend 6 months complaining about it, or 6 years in my case.
I know you're feeling well on that, and there are some moves that I will just kill forever, and I understood like that. There's a few Hawks moves that I have that same sort of mantra about that you do about that particular signing that you were describing, but. Dwight, I didn't love it, and I said that, and I wrote it when it happened, so this is not revisionist. I can go back and find it. I was not a fan of the move, but at the same time, I did sort of understand what they were trying to do. So if there have been moves where I just didn't understand them at all, and I will say that, but this one, I didn't agree, but I at least sort of could get to where they were, I think, mentally. It just didn't work. So, yeah, I mean, there are definitely things that can't be defended, this is not one of those, I don't think. I just didn't go the way that they wanted it to.
Okay. All right. You know, if I was an NBA guy, this would have been, I would have been killing the Hawks for this move all last year.
And I was, but I was killing them for the move all year. But at the same time, like, you have to try to at least be impartial-ish when you're dealing with these guys. Like, I'm in the locker room. It's like, I can't just say, you know, Dwight's a bum, because he's not. Again, he played. It's not his fault. Like, he's kind of just what he is at this point. Like, I think mistake is like thinking he's better than he is now. If, like, if you think you're going to get Dwight Howard from 2007, like, that guy's not coming back. He's gone. If the Falcons signed Roddy White back right now and people thought he was going to be prime Roddy White again, it's like, no, he's going to run 7 yard outs and that's going to be it. But no, it is what it is. Dwight's better than that, I should say. Like, yeah. If Roddy came back now, Roddy can't run anymore. So I understand that. I just try to make an easy Falcons analogy, but Dwight's still better than that, but he's not the guy he used to be.
Uh-huh. So you talked about the Hawks trying to collect some assets. Do you feel like they came away from the draft with some solid assets?
Yeah, I mean, John Collins, I wasn't in love with that pick necessarily, but I understood it. Like, they got him at a good value. He was a guy from Wake Forest that was projected to be a top 15 pick and slipped a little bit, got to 19 where the Hawks picked him. And I think even on draft night, you know, the GM was saying that they were surprised he was there, and I was surprised he was there. So they just kind of grabbed him as a value proposition, and that's fine, I think. And he's looked very good. I'm actually in Vegas covering the Hawks during summer league right now, so I've seen plenty of John Collins in the last couple of days, and he's looked very good. Again, it's summer league, so it's kind of, it doesn't really matter necessarily, but you can definitely be encouraged by guys and the way they perform. So I've been encouraged by him. you know, second round pick, Tyler Dorsey, you know, jury's still out, but it's a second round pick. You know, second round picks in the NBA are basically just flyers. Like, if you get anything out of a second round pick in the NBA, you've succeeded. It's not like the NFL where, like, you have to hit on second round picks because those guys are probably going to start for you pretty soon. Second round picks in the NBA, man, like, if you hit on like one quarter of those, you're doing pretty well. So we'll see on that one. But I think Collins is going to be an NBA player for a long time. We'll see how good he's going to be. But at number 19 in the NBA draft, you probably only need to be able to get like a fringe starter level player, and you've done a pretty good job. And I think he can definitely be that. We'll see if he can be like much more than that. But as long as he's a guy who can come out and play for you right away, he's going to play a lot too. At least on the team right now, the way that they built it, he's going to play a lot as a rookie, which should be fun. But he scores, he rebounds, he does things that he's a really good athlete. He's had a couple of like really highlight dunks out here too, which is fun. I think Hawks fans are going to like him a lot.
You talk about the future with the Hawks. Do you feel like this is going to be a multi-year process, or, you know, people talk about sort of what free agents are going to be available next offseason, and mentioned that earlier, that there's a lot of rumors and reports about certain stars from the East going west, possibly next offseason to a small town by the name of Los Angeles. What do you feel like the Hawks could sort of make a hard left turn? And if some of those guys don't land in LA, throw some money at a couple of stars to sort of get themselves back in the East, particularly if, you know, some small point forward from Cleveland decides to vacate the Eastern Conference, it's going to be pretty wide open for somebody to take it. So, you know, I don't know, you know, if that's really a great position to be in. You're just basically going to be like, I want to be the team that loses to the Warriors or the Lakers every year. But it's something you can get behind, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about the quick rebuild they're doing here is that they're going to have some cap space. I mean, most teams, there's been a lot of money spent in the last couple of years in the NBA. It's been a big story, and the Hawks spent some of it too on, you know, guys like Kent Bazemore. They spent big money on, but for the most part, their cap sheet's pretty clean moving forward. So if they don't do a whole lot this summer, and they're not great this year, they'll have a high draft pick, and then they will also be able to get into the free agency saga next year if they want to. They'll have max cap space, so if they could lure a guy, you know, probably not LeBron or something like that, but if you can get in that next tier of guys, if they feel like there's a good fit, they can certainly do that. Or, you know, cap space in the NBA, people think can just be used for free agency. They can also be used for trade pretty well. If a guy like gets disgruntled elsewhere, if a high end piece gets like sort of sick, like the way that Paul George was just now, if he's on the market like that kind of player that doesn't want to stay where they currently are, the Hawks could jump in the mix for somebody like that as well. So, you know, having cap space, I think they're going to not try to be the Philadelphia 76ers. They're not going to make this like a 4 or 5 year rebuild if they can help it. Just being smart, though, I think that's been the party line, and it's one that I agree with. It's just basically signing responsible contracts, not getting bogged down in deals that are too big for too long has been sort of their priority, and I agree with that. So, you know, with that said, they're going to have some cap space next year. We'll see how much they use it or how much they can use it, because it always takes two parties to sign on the dotted line. Yeah. And, you know, for a superstar to want to come to Atlanta, they usually want to come sort of join a team that's like almost ready made. So it might be a little bit of a challenge in that way, but they're going to have a lot of flexibility, and you know, flexibility doesn't really sell tickets necessarily, but it's good in terms of building your roster long term. And I don't think the Hawks are going to be awful for a long time. This year is probably not going to be great. It's sort of, this is the one transition year, but I think they don't plan to be bad for very long. So they'll spend some money at some point in the future and keep investing in these draft picks.
Okay. Well, Brad, I don't have any other NBA questions or thoughts. If you want to talk a little Falcons, I'm more than game to do so.
Whatever you want, man. Yeah, we can do that. I will not claim to be as dialed in as you are right now until about once basketball like sort of ends for me, which is like 2 weeks from now, I can like get back in football mode. And as you well know, it's not been easy to just dive back into the Falcons post February. But you know, I still know what's going on for the most part. So yeah, I mean, fire anything you would like at me. I'm probably more excited than I should be, because they're still going to be good, aren't they?
Yeah,
I think they're going to be good.
I hope so. They should. I mean,
that's fine.
You can make a strong case that they're the team to beat in the NFC, at least on paper. And so I guess for me, the two big questions is there going to be any hangover from the Super Bowl? And is the defense going to make that big jump forward? If they do, then they shouldn't have any problems. If they don't, then, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I don't think they're going to bottom out by any means if it doesn't happen for them, because their offense is still going to be good. It's just a question of whether it's going to be amazing like it was last year. But yeah, you know, they certainly, you know, shouldn't go from worst to first to worst or anything like that. So, yeah, I think it's not, you know, not all dire for Atlanta sports in the near future.
That's a good thing. I'm sort of buying the defense. The hangover stuff is always overblown. I think it does matter a little bit, I suppose. But like as you said, I can't imagine this team's going to suddenly go 6-10. I just don't see that unless like Matt Ryan gets hurt or something. Like that's about the only thing that I could see where they actually just go in the tank like that. I will ask you, since I'm the guest, I can ask you one question. I know you've answered this before on the podcast, but just for me, how you feeling about Sark?
I'm curious to see what he does. I don't quite buy the people that are sort of talking about him like improving on the offense this year. Like I certainly think there's, you know, a possibility that he can, you know, improve upon the offense in a couple of years once he sort of gets into the NFL. But like he's spent 1 year as a quarterback coach in the NFL. He's never called plays in the NFL. He's running somebody else's system. These are all brand new players to him. At least from my perspective, there is a learning curve in the NFL. Like, if there wasn't, then pretty much anybody would come into the league and be, you know, putting up these amazing offenses, which we know doesn't really happen very often, even when you're a quote-unquote a genius, like a Chip Kelly or anything like that. But, like, so I think he'll do well. I don't necessarily buy that he's going to do better than Shanahan, at least immediately. But,
no, yeah.
I think he, you know, there should be, you know, as far as first-year offensive coordinators go, I think I have about as high expectations as I think you really could possibly have, given the talent that he'll have to work with. And basically, you know, as long as they can run the ball, as long as they don't overfeed Julio and don't fall back into the trap of, well, just get Julio the ball and not sort of, you know, be what they were last year, which was arguably the key to their success, which was you were just as afraid as of Taylor Gabriel and Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman and maybe even occasionally Mohamed Sanu as you were of Julio. So that, you know, that's really sort of their key to success. And we'll see if Sark is as good as pulling that off with his play calling. But I think he'll do a good job.
Yeah, that's the big question. When I'm talking about talking stuff with people that I trust, it's like the dividing line is basically how much do you think Kyle Shanahan had to do with last year's success? And obviously everybody agrees that he did a good job. There's no question about that. It's just how good of a job, I suppose. Like how much credit does he deserve? And if you give him all the credit or a lot of the credit, then you have to worry a little bit because he's not there anymore. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I've always been a Matt Ryan guy forever, so it was nice to see Matt Ryan come on last year, obviously, in the way that he did. And, you know, Shanahan gets some credit for that. There's no question about that. But Matt was fantastic for the most part. You know, when you win the MVP of the league, there's not too much you can be asked to do that you didn't already do. But we'll see. I'm encouraged. I'm trying to be positive. You know, I'm an Atlanta sports fan, so it's been beaten out of me as much as it possibly could be at this point. But, you know, by mid-August, I think I'll be ready to go, and I'll be all in again, and then I'm sure my heart will be broken again, but it'll be fun.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting. I think, you know, when people sort of talk about how bright the future is and whatnot, I'm a little skeptical, not in the sense of I doubt what people are saying. It's just like I think this year is going to be really telling to whether or not sort of we can look at last season as a one-off, as, you know, that was the team's shot, and then, you know, not to say that they're going to go into the tank over the next couple of years, but they just, you know, they might be more like, say, the 08 Cardinals or something like that, where they're a competitive team, but they're not quite a Super Bowl contender. Or are they going to be the sort of team that, like, the Seahawks were not that long ago, or the 49ers were just a few years before that, or even going way back to, I guess, the early 2000s with the Eagles, basically being on the doorstep of going to the Super Bowl every year. Is this going to be a multi-year thing, or is it just sort of like, oh, we did it this 1 year, and, you know, 4 or 5 years later, we got another shot or something like that? So that, to me, is going to be the interesting question. I have no clue what the answer to that, because I can't tell the future. I think there's definitely reasons for people to be optimistic, but I tend to be a little bit more of a wait and see. So, you know, we'll see what happens when we get, you know, partially into the season and seeing how this team is dealing with sort of what other teams are throwing at them. They're not going to catch anybody off guard this year. So that certainly doesn't necessarily play into their favor. But at the same time, if Dan Quinn does a good job of keeping this team hungry and not falling into the same trap that the Mike Smith teams did, which was basically not, you know, thinking that they were sort of entitled to being the best team in the league, as opposed to being willing to go out there and earn it, then, you know, the sky's the limit for this team for the next couple of years. But, I have no idea how that's going to play out, but I'm very curious to see how it does.
Well, if nothing else, you can get off those jokes about the $32 million wide receiver, so yeah. You should be good.
Yes.
There's a nice baseline for you to enjoy throughout the season. So,
but, you know, you say that, Brad, but he'll probably wind up having, like, 1,000 yards and, like, 10 touchdowns or something like that this year. And
I would love that. I'm a fan. I understand the deal is bad. I'm actually on your side on that one. I did not love that contract. But I like the player. That's the funny thing. Like, I like Sanu. I just think he's overpaid. It's kind of like, to bring it back to basketball one last time, it's like Kent Bazemore. I like Kent Bazemore a lot. And he makes a lot of money. And he makes too much money. But that doesn't mean he's bad. It just means he's overpaid.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I seem to be the only person that doesn't like Sanu. It's not that I dislike him. It's my brand now, so I have to keep this up.
You have to. No, you're all in. It's fine. You're dug in. I at this point, it would be definitely weird if you came around on him all of a sudden, so I'm good with it.
Yeah, I look forward to the day where I get into a heated debate with someone about Sanu versus Taylor Gabriel, who should we give money to or something like that, and I'm on the Sanu side or something like that. So that'll be a funny day when that happens. I doubt it will.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, Brad. I appreciate you talking with me. Go ahead and plug where people can keep up with the NBA stuff until you lose interest for the next 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, for sure. I'm on Twitter at BT Roland. I write for Peachtree Hoops on the Atlanta Hawks side. I write for Dime Magazine over at UpRocks on the general NBA side. I'm also the host on the Locked on Hawks podcast. So a little bit of brand synergy there. If you like the Hawks, go listen to that and subscribe and do a lot of fun stuff. And yeah, man, that's kind of where you can find me. Oh, I write about the Braves occasionally over at Talking Chop. So if you like baseball, and we have not talked about baseball, we won't talk about baseball. But if you want to listen to that as well, I do a little podcast there and write about the Braves. So I'm kind of all over the place, but you can find me for sure at BT Rolling on Twitter is the best place.
There you go. All right, Brad, appreciate it. Talking both NBA and NFL with me, you're one of the only people that I look forward to talking NBA with because you can sort of explain things that don't make me feel like an idiot in a way. And I feel comfortable in your gentle hands, I guess. That doesn't sound too creepy.
No, I understand. It's my pleasure, sir. Anytime you need anybody to talk about basketball on your Atlanta Falcons podcast, I'm here for you.
All right. Well, hopefully football, the Falcons do well enough that no one cares about the NBA. But
agreed.
There have been previous seasons where we get to December and it's like, let's talk some NBA stuff. So I at least I have that you on speed dial, that emergency number I can dial in case that happens.
For sure. I'm here, man. Whatever you need.
All right, man. You have a good night.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right. Appreciate it. All right, guys. That was our show. Brad, again, I appreciate him coming on and giving us his time. I will be back with further episodes. That Eric Saubert episode should be coming soon. I also do want to talk some NFC South previews, talk about the other NFC South teams. And as many of you know, I do want to do a fan talk. So we did one last week with Steve Cohen. Hopefully we'll have several coming up in the coming weeks in the lead up to training camp. And maybe if it's such a hit success and I like doing them, we'll continue them into training camp because how much do you want to hear about, you know, this day of practice? Oh, I heard this guy looked good in practice and this guy's catching everything. And this guy, like, you know, it's all positivity and you know how much I hate positivity. So that may be something we'll bring on. We'll keep going for the next couple of weeks. But if you want to be one of the fans on the show, please send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. That's the best way to get at me. And in terms of, I'll put you on the list. I don't know exactly if and when I will have you on because I'm sort of trying to set that up right now as we're talking. And I don't know when the next episode is going to be. I'm going to try to do some other stuff and schedule for this week, and then maybe we might have like 3 fan talk episodes next week. I don't know. But that's something that you guys can look forward to. We will get to that. Other ways to get in touch with the show, you can send in your questions and I will answer them on the show. Maybe I'll even have some of the fans answer some of those questions as well with me. The ways to get at us are the email address I just gave. That's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Locked On Falcons on Twitter. Locked On Falcons on Facebook is the page if you don't like 140 characters. My Twitter handle is FalcFans. You just let me know it's a podcast question and not a general quarterback accuracy or fourth tight end battle question, which, you know, is what my timeline is all about. And where else? FalcFans.com, AudioBoom.com is also where you can leave a comment as well. So that's it, guys. I hope you did not stress too much about an NBA show. We did talk a little bit about football, but it's July, as I said to Brad. There's nothing else going on. So, you know, in the words of Adam Sandler, in the cult classic, The Wedding Singer, I have a microphone, so you will listen to every word that I have to say. So I wanted to talk NBA, so you guys got to hear NBA. There you go. All right. See you guys later this week.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.